This is a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration, convened with a purpose to reflect on the budget for the Department of Public Service and Administration. Initially, we were supposed to be also looking at the CICA budget. They have requested that we defer that item to a later date because there are still some in-house issues they are dealing with. We're also supposed to be reflecting on the draft 2008 program of the Portfolio Committee, the one we developed at the stress plan workshop. That item also is deferred until next week. We still have quite a lot of issues related to coordination that we need to take on board when we develop or when we finally adopt the program. So for now, it will only be one item reflecting on that. We have some apologies by some members who would like to leave by Thursday. And we believe that maybe when they leave, we will be left with few hours to finish the business of the day. So they're not going to miss a lot, but it will only be 2 hours left for us. You are all welcome, members of the committee, the Department of Public Service and Administration, other stakeholders present here, the Public Service Commission. And maybe without further ado, I want to hand over. We know each other. There is that standing item of introduction. Maybe let's do that. There are some brand new members who are part of us going to be part of the finishing. So let's start there, KK. Come this way and then we'll move on.
Kenneth Kumalo, member of the committee.
Kenneth Kembo, member of the committee.
Take it off. Lorna Maloney, member of the committee.
Ndaba Kobaza, member of the committee.
William Mashangwani, member of the committee from Limpopo province.
Oh. You're the only one from South Africa.
Jane Masumela, committee member.
And my name is Carl Mini, I'm a member of the committee.
My name is I Frederick Jewish, member of the committee.
I'm Richard Baloyi, member of the committee, acting chair.
Richard Skakane, committee member.
Michelle Williams, DPSA.
Lewis Rackin, Office of the Minister for Public Service.
Richard Levine from the DPSA, and we seem to have skipped Shamila. She's not part of the furniture, she's a parliamentary officer.
David Wilsonak, I'm acting CFO for DPSA.
Sambi Sakumala from DPSA.
Robert Shaw from DPSA.
I'm Liz
Thanks. We now know each other. We know the purpose of the meeting. We know the first item. Maybe let's get into details with the first item. DG, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Members. Obviously, we fresh out of the strategic planning meeting, so there would inevitably be some repetition of what happened there, but we tried to structure the presentation in a way in which we would minimize that and also try and make it lively. So we decided to introduce a historical overview, just to give you a sense of where the DPSA comes from and how it's grown, by looking at certain key elements of the budget. And then we're going to look at some recent achievements. We will look at the DPSA program structure, the budget information, the operational plan, which is being finalized as we make this presentation for 2008-09, and then our priority projects per program. The historical overview, in this table, we're just trying to show the growth and development of the DPSA. And we have various years that we've highlighted here. And then we have the number of filled positions. So it gives you a sense of the number of staff we've had, how we've grown from 251 in 1996-97 to 383 in March 2007. So there has been a steady growth in the organization as we've taken on new tasks and try to deepen the existing work. The finance allocation is the overall budget, and that also indicates how we've grown in budgetary terms, which obviously translates into an increased volume and scope of work. And then the final column is the number of programs. These are the budget programs, and there we see that up until sort of, you know, 2001-02, we had three programs, but then we grew our program structure, and then we contracted it by combining a few programs, and leaves us with six programs. So that just gives a sense of the growth of the department, the development of the department. And the next one also just tries to give a sense of the growth in the compensation of employees. So the budgetary growth around expenditure on HR is reflected in this particular slide, which also does some projection during the medium-term expenditure period. So it does indicate that we have undergone a period of rapid growth, but now we're into a phase more of consolidation. There will be growth, but not at the kind of rate which we've grown over the past few years, which has been big and obviously has presented us with a number of challenges. But now we're trying to consolidate our growth and our programs and become a fully effective organization. Moving on to some of the achievements, many of which we spoke about last week. The Public Service Amendment Bill, and obviously we have this committee to thank, was a big sort of milestone in our recent development. It was declared an act and published in the Government Gazette on the 17th of January. We also had a decision by Cabinet last July which enabled us to begin consultation on the single public service legislation. Although we keep calling it the SPS draft bill, I prefer to call it the SPS legislation because the bill itself has a different name. So we are busy with consultations at the moment, and we are also doing a lot of refinement of the bill itself, of the legislation. There's an intense process of consultation which we engage in at the moment with senior counsel around the bill. And we are hoping to gazette soon, within the next month or so, in terms of section 1542 of the Constitution, which requires us to do so because it would affect institutions of local government. Then the Handbook on Reasonable Accommodation for People with Disabilities was launched. We see this as being very important. And the Health and Wellness and Leadership Development Management Strategic Frameworks have been developed and approved, along with the Human Resource Development Strategy in December of 2007. We're also proceeding with the implementation of HR Connect, which is really the system we've developed to provide government with a skills database, which will give us a much better sense of the actual true picture of skills in various departments. Then there's the HOD's 8 Principles Action Plan for Women Empowerment, which we launched in August last year, and we plan to hold an annual event of this nature where we involve HODs to reaffirm the commitment to meeting gender equity and equality in the workplace. We have developed a policy and procedure around the revolving door, which would provide for a better interface between universities and the public service, as well as other public entities like CSIR, HSRC, and so on. And we will have to see how the matter is dealt with at the executive level. We have signed agreements on occupational specific dispensations for nurses and the legally qualified. And then the educators, the matter is still under negotiations in the education bargaining chamber, and we'll have to await the outcome of that process. The remuneration review for the FMS has been completed, and implementation commenced in January 2008, and there will be some further proposals made later during the course of this year on this matter. And we are currently, in terms of the collective agreement, working on the professional occupational specific dispensation for social workers, correctional services, and then middle management, deputies and the directors. We have developed an electronic inventory of government information systems, EITIS compliance report, and this has been presented to the GTOC ICT Standing Committee. We have developed a report on the e-government strategy for ICT connectivity, a matter that we would be very keen in engaging this committee around. Hopefully we will get an opportunity for this at some point. The integration standards are completed, and we're used to update the minimum interoperability standards version 4, which was accepted by stakeholders. And then we will look to version 5 to close some of the gaps that were identified in version 4. A service-orientated architecture is nearing completion and circulated to the GTOC Architecture Standing Committee for comment and discussion. And we also provided support to the Office of the AG, Auditor General, to develop a framework to guide IT auditing in the public service. We've also completed a Know Your Service Rights booklet. We're hoping to have sort of a high-powered launch in early March, because we believe that this is a very important aspect of Bashupili and a gap that has existed, and that is more of the citizen focus. So a lot of our focus has been on government, training government officials, dealing with government around Bashupili. This is more of a citizen-centered approach, where we're actually saying, in a very, very user-friendly booklet, very easy for citizens across the board, it'll be translated, it's very well illustrated, and it will be saying, citizens, here are your rights. You must exercise them when you engage with government accordingly. So we're quite excited about this particular initiative here. We have, as you are aware, completed the census, including the biometrical enrollment in Kinshasa, DRC. We've completed a guide now for the submission of service delivery improvement plans. The training of officials in municipalities, 245 municipalities, 850 trained in the Bashupili Change Management Engagement Program. And we have also provided a guide for departments in developing their organizational structures to make sure that they are aligned with their strategic plans and service delivery processes. And we have completed a concept paper on the barometer of public innovation. A conflict of interest framework has been developed, and as we know, the Commission has also developed a toolkit on this area of work. We are nearing completion on the impact appraisal, which I think is a very important piece of work, that again we would hope to be engaging with the committee in one way or another in the future on the National Anti-Corruption Framework. So that we can see how successful we've been up until now, identify the gaps, and obviously try and close them. We will be moving towards another National Anti-Corruption Summit, most likely to take place in May this year. The Public Management Watch, we have developed this very useful tool which can comment on the state of public management, because we've also included indicators from Treasury information and the Auditor General's reports. So it allows us to look at the state of public management on a quarterly basis and make reports and recommendations. The hosting of the Commonwealth Heads of African Public Service, as well as workshops on SADC and the Africa Public Service Charter have been held. The agreement which we did discuss last year on IPSA in the area of public administration and governance, and the work that we've done in that regard, mainly focused on service delivery improvement. And then the Continental Public Service Innovation Awards, which we have been supporting, and which will also be presented at the next Pan-African Ministers Conference. Moving on to our program structure. Program one is administration, where we provide policy, strategic leadership, and management of the department. Program 2, human resource management and development. Develop and implement an integrated strategy, monitor employment practices, conduct human resource planning and diversity management, and improve the health and well-being of the public service. The management of compensation program focuses on compensation policies and guidelines for the public sector, as well as collective bargaining. Information and technology management focuses on ensuring the effective use of IT in government and facilitating the use of IT for modernizing government and establishing e-government practices within an acceptable information security environment. Service delivery improvement involves engagement in supportive interventions and partnerships, improving efficiency and effectiveness, as well as innovative learning and knowledge-based modes and practices of service delivery in public service. And in the governance program, with its focus on improving governance and public administration for better service delivery in Africa and other participating countries worldwide, in support of the vision of efficiency and increased participation in governance by fighting corruption and carrying out participatory monitoring. The budget summary for Vote 8 is presented for the medium term here per program, and we can see that if we look at the total expenditure estimates, it kind of falls from 2008-09 to 2009-10, and then it grows again 2010-11. And again, as we have been explaining in previous meetings on this matter in recent years, it's mainly the policy on incapacity incapacity leave and ill health retirement pillar, which explains why we have this falling budget, because this budget will be decentralized to departments who will need to take direct responsibility for managing and implementing the program. So we have separated that out. There is also the question of the PC tax, which has presented us with numerous challenges as well. So we've separated that out as well. We have created the institutional basis over the last couple of years for the PC to become a fully fledged public entity. But there are questions of capacity and the related risk which have hampered rapid progress towards the institutional realignment of the PCTA, which still therefore remains within the ambit of the DPSA. Then the allocation per program, just to give a sense of the cake in a pie chart, how it's cut up, where the biggest programs are, where we have the biggest expenditure. And that also gives you a sense, this being for the 2008-09 year, the extent of the pillar program with the centralized budget, which obviously is a big job for us as well, to run on a centralized basis. And SDI would also include the single public service budget for the various work streams where work is carrying on in that regard. So we've done in the next graph economic classification, compensation, goods and services, which shows the growth in our compensation budget. And it shows the variations over time anticipated during the MTEF period on goods and services. And then the next table gives the policy option allocations. Now, as you are aware, we are required to submit policy options, some of which are funded and some of which are not funded. But we developed a series of policy options. And obviously, in view of the current economic climate, Treasury was very tough on funding these. It has meant that some critical projects only get funding in the outer year. The HR Connect, we see that as a critical project, because it's the project that's going to give us the true picture of skills in the public service. So what we want to do there is we want to use a slightly different approach, and also we are looking for some donor funding to assist. But we want to get departments to take more responsibility for their own part of the system, which is how it should really be, because the system should be useful to departments. It should help them to manage skills development within their own departments by giving them a true picture, by allowing them to, on an ongoing basis, review the kind of training programs that individual members of staff have undergone, how this has impacted on their performance, etc., etc. The GIS, again, we're going to have to be creative. We see this as a critical project. This is a geographical information system to support the single public service, because this information system will tell us about where the population is located in South Africa. It will tell us where the service delivery points are in relation to the population, and then it will tell us how we have deployed public service, including the skills and all the other things, the information base we bring around those public servants. But it will also tell us about where all the managers are located, because we do believe we have a top-heavy management deployment, with most managers sitting in national government and then provincial government, and it gets thinner and thinner. And then if you look at the actual service delivery points, again, because obviously some national departments like Home Affairs are involved in service delivery, but most of their managers would be sitting in the head offices, either in Pretoria or in their regional offices. And the further you get to the ground where people are confronting problems. So this GIS, we believe, is going to be very important in terms of achieving the objectives the single public service. And then the free and open source software, again, Cabinet did approve a policy, a proactive policy of free and open source software for the public service. And again, we have constraints on the funding, but we are working with CETA, and maybe that will provide us with some relief as we pilot the migration to open source software platform. Communications, we were given, as you can see, additional budget to strengthen our communication. The accommodation is because, as you can see, as we've grown our staff, our accommodation, our building has got some constraints. So we are in negotiations with Public Works for a second site, hopefully very near to the main Batapedi House in Proust Street, Pretoria. So that explains those.
Ten thousand.
So obviously we've got to just keep it tight for another year, but then we'll be able to get out of the squeeze in 2009-10. And then, you know, on compensation, because we put up an option there, we sought to further grow, but Treasury moderated our request. This is how we'll grow in that area. The next slide just sort of gives the main cost drivers for 2008-09, PILA, PC, the transfer, and the single public service, 2009-10, the single public service, 2010-11, HR Connect and the single public service. Now moving on to our operational plan. Basically, we want to sort of discuss it in relation to these sorts of headings here, which is the Presidential Apex Project, Project 15. Then the priorities we've identified as the ones we need to achieve during the remaining term of this government. The GNA Program of Action, then projects which emanate from the Mahfuzla, and then the short and medium term projects from the DPSA strategic plan. Now, in terms of Program 1 administration, on service delivery access and improvement, because some of these are transversal, they operate in different programs. So in terms of Program 1, legal services sits in Program 1, and hence the legislation part of it is in Program 1. And then on the GMA, there will be the bi-monthly reports on the implementation of the Program of Action, the Lakota reports, which we will need to produce in July and January. And then in terms of the strategic plan, now that we have got the amendment bill through and it's been enacted, we will now need to develop regulations for the Public Service Amendment Act, which is a big, very big job, as we all appreciate. And then quarterly and annual reporting on program performance. Program 2, this is the program within which the APEX project falls, which is on the signing of performance agreements for the SMS and the filling of posts at the top echelon, DG, DDG, CFO. Then the big five projects on human resource development, which is the implementation of the HRD strategy, improving our planning capacity for government across the board, and then the skills database project, the HR Connect. On the GNA program of action, this program would need to ensure that we implement gender and disability programs across the public service, the HR planning strategic framework, and the leadership development management strategic framework as well. There are a number of Lakota projects which this program will have to deliver on. And then the first one there would be looking at what HR Connect, as far as we've gone now in the 20 departments, tells us about skills in the public service. And then the review of HR components and positioning them to strategically assist departments to achieve strategic goals. We believe we need to strengthen the HR function substantially across government, and that's what that one is about. And then the organizational performance management. How are the different departments performing at organizational level? And ultimately, we want to begin drawing that into performance management, particularly of the Directors General. And then measures to enhance professionalism of the SMS. And I think people will know my view that we need to develop a more sort of professional ethos within the senior management service, collective commitment to better service delivery across the senior management service. On the strategic plan, the HR competency framework, the recognition of prior learning policy, very important. Monitoring the implementation of the employee health and wellness strategic framework. Training of public servants on mainstreaming HIV and AIDS. Developing a policy for the establishment of development assessment centers in national and provincial academies. And monitoring the implementation of competency assessments. Program 3, Management of Compensation, the big five projects on the DPSA's list is the professionals, the occupational specific dispensations, implementation of a multi-term wage agreement, the remuneration policy for the single public service, which is on the GNA program of action. Then there's a number of Lakota projects, career pathing and grade progression, the roadmap to the public sector summit, and ensuring effective communications on conditions of service. On the strategic plan, we have the finalization of the occupational specifics for social workers, health professionals, apart from nurses, correctional services, and the middle management. Then the review of the Quake job evaluation system, and implementing and customizing the HR module of the integrated finance management system in two lead departments. Then overseeing the implementation and ensuring decentralization now of the policy on incapacity leave and ill health retirement. And then evaluating retirement fund arrangements in the public service and local government. And developing and implementing a revised policy on post-retirement medical assistance for public service employees. In terms of information and technology management, the Big Five projects, which this program is responsible for there, is to improve access to government services through the use of ICT. That's the whole e-government thing, which we mentioned earlier. We hope to engage with you about. And then expanding the Bajapeli Gateway Portal operation. Then on the GNA program of action is also the next generation e-government implementation. The Lukhutla project, the review of IT procurement, the implementation of the ICT Catalytics, which is also the e-government project, the Catalytic project. And then on the strategic plan, the rollout of the Gateway Portal to 48 Chusong centers, the deployment of the IGIS, the facilitation of the implementation of open source policy and strategy, and then conducting an assessment on the existence, functionality, and effectiveness of mobile units, and conducting an audit of call centers. Program 5, Service Delivery Improvement. The DPSA Big 5 there is around the access to service delivery strategy, the CDW program, the installation of e-service counters at Tucson centers, the implementation of service delivery improvement plans, and the cascading of Bajapeli to local government. These also do appear on the GNA program of action, and the Lukhutla project focus on improving the working environment in frontline offices, implementation of service delivery improvement plans in the justice cluster, and consulting with departments on organizational structure. In terms of the strategic plan for Program 5, that's developing the strategic framework for service delivery improvement, implementation of the Bajapeli Change Management Engagement Program, continued support to the DRC on the rollout of the census, coordinating learning and information sharing platforms through the Public Management Conversation, Service Delivery Learning Academy, etc. Publishing best practice case studies through the Service Delivery Journal, and then investigating and piloting innovative projects. Finally, Program 6, Governance, the Big 5 projects on the African governance agenda, facilitating the adoption and implementation of the African Public Service Charter, the implementation of the APRM, the second National Anti-Corruption Program, and providing support to regional and continental structures. And then there is also a Big Five project on monitoring evaluation, which is the provision of the Public Management Watch Report for decision makers and support to the Presidency in implementing the government-wide M&E system. These projects are also part of the GNA Program of Action. There are some specific Lukhutla projects which would be facilitating and monitoring the updating of information on PERSOL and the implementation of minimum anti-corruption standards. In terms of strategic plan then, developing mechanisms to enhance public participation within monitoring evaluation, the implementation of the anti-corruption communication campaign, the implementation of the public service corruption, the public management watch, bilateral, trilateral and multilateral agreements, the anti-corruption framework in the DRC, and then facilitating the DPSA involvement in IPSA, as well as other regional and continental structures. I think in conclusion, it is important to say, because we presented a very long list of projects and large volume of work which we are undertaking, that we Treasury has curtailed our funding requests on the expansion of the organization, the point I made. I think it is something we need to take in mind when we look at, you know, the extent to which we will be able to implement all the things that we're looking to implement in the medium term. So I think really it does require us to be very economic and efficient in the way in which we use our resources. We must make sure that we're using our resources optimally. We must make sure that we are developing our staff to make sure that they can operate optimally. We obviously have to manage their performance very rigorously. So it requires a strong corporate governance environment for us to achieve all these things within the resource base that we have. And then I think what we've tried to sort of really highlight is that we have committed ourselves to the big five priority projects. We identified them last year around this time, and we indicated at that time to the minister that in the final couple of years of the current government's term of office, this would be the focus. Then of course we have several GNA projects which we need to complete by the end of this year. And then there's also by June, in terms of the cabinet of Huta process, there's many as well, which we've listed under the various programs. And then of course by March of 2009, in terms of the operational plan, there's a number of deliverables. So, Siyabonga Mphathi Wehlelo.
Thanks very much, DG. And maybe before we proceed, let me welcome honorable members Mfundisi and Sema. They are right here. I saw members surprised. Hey, where are we? They are members of this portfolio committee. The multi-party component or aspect of this committee was not like sort of fully serviced. Hence, we had to remind members and thank that members are here. We still will be having Honorable Cupido and Honorable Mlalose. They apologize for attending this meeting. You are welcome. Colleagues, that's a presentation from the DG Public Service. It is a story in terms of what they have to do, their priorities, their history, and stuff like that. And of course, you need some random sense to realize that your objective contained in the story. So this is what the presentation was all about. I see Mrs. Kakane, Mr. Yulis, Dr. Rupnare, Mematomela, in that order in her action. Thank you.
Chairperson, it just struck me, and I just want an explanation. DG, historical overview. Could you explain, I don't understand, 2-1-2-0-2. I expected the speakers to have a sequence. Now, I see 2-2-1, 1999 to 2000, 2-2-1, field post. You got an allocation of 156. the following year, although the numbers increased, but the allocation dropped. Can you explain that?
The economic question.
You got my question. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. President.
I would like to know. Now, we're going to have this money, we're going to spend this money. Pure and simple to improve service delivery. I mean, that's what we must deal with, right? So, what? If you don't achieve our goals, what's going to happen in the department? Let's say, a head of the department. We give him all the tools to perform. If you don't perform, then what's going to happen? That's what I would like to know. Because this is what we're trying to achieve, right? We're going to spend this money, we're going to improve our skills within the department. So what, tell me, what is going to happen if we don't achieve that? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Yudis, for sounding like a judge who is saying to a convicted person, you are found guilty, then tell me what you must do.
Thank you, Chair Batman. Thank you for this comprehensive document. I just have three areas. This public service theater, I thought most of the theaters were funded from the skills development levy or so. And why does it have to come out of the public service budget? Because it's a huge amount. And the other area, you said there was going to be this Know Your Rights booklet, brochure. It's going to be in all the official languages. And recently, in the newspapers, we've been reading about public servants and the financial improprieties and misconduct. I think it was a DG in KwaZulu-Natal who's taken $18 million away, but even had awarded himself a performance bonus. How can we ensure that this minimum standards, anti-corruption standards, you know, starts to begin at every level, from top to bottom, so that, you know, all those chapter 10 constitutional values of public service becomes real. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Patrick. If I were to take you back again to the history, the historical overview, my major concern is about the program. And I did not hear that the latter part of Member Skakane's question, but if he has asked the same question, please, I beg your pardon, Chair Patrick. I'm concerned about the reduction in the number of programs. Although in 2004-2005 we had 8 programs and finance allocated that was 127,462, in 2006-2007 the number of programs decreased to 6, but the finance allocated increased to 442,426. I just want to know what motivated us to do that. Has this in any way improved our service delivery? And what was the impact of those programs that we had to do away with? Were they not adding value? Why did we have to decrease our programs? And then, Chairperson, if I will go to, to slide on policy option allocation. I see for 2010-2011 we have allocated for the first time money for the geographic transformation system. And I really appreciate the, you know, the explanation that was given by the DG that this is going to assist in giving us information as to the number of managers. And from the report that we received sometimes towards the end of last year, it became very clear that we have a managerial problem. One of the reasons, among the many others, why we are unable to really deliver services to our service station is lack of proper and good management in place. Now, I just want to know that this amount that we have allocated, how we know what we are expecting. We're anticipating to get information to say there are more managers up there, but as they are needed, must count. So how is this going to ensure that our efficiency of management improves in the public service? And sadly, Chairperson, on the human resource management and development, I also really appreciate that we are taking seriously the issue of enhancing professionalism. As a result, we have mentioned there that we are going to take measures to enhance professionalism. I just want to be informed briefly as to what is it, what measures are we going to take to ensure that the professionalism is enhanced. I consider that also to be of importance in ensuring that we improve service delivery. Finally, Chairperson, on the conclusion that we made, we do acknowledge the fact that Treasury has decreased, or rather has stopped the expansion of personnel numbers, curtailed that, we say we have to make optimal use of the resources that we have for us to be able to improve our service delivery. So I just want to know as to how would the single public service assist in ensuring that will the single public service assist in ensuring that we optimally use the resources that we have available in the public service? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor Matomela, and your skillful way of ambushing. There are two questions that are put in the form of statements in the questions that you raise. The one is where he made a statement that our ability to perform in the service delivery perform as expected is sometimes always compromised due to the fact that we may not be having good managers. That is a thing. And I know in a situation where so skillful that question is put, the DG may also be skillful to to avoid responding directly is the fact that the issue of the quality of management impact upon service delivery. I think that is put crudely. But also the aspect of the curtailment and the single public service issue, you can also then say if you have to deal with a bill like the single public service as it has, obviously you are going to draw quite a number of your personnel to be deployed to deal with that with that aspect. And if it happens in the same year where you have this curtailment, is it not actually worsening instead of actually the other thing, the challenges? That's why I say he asked that question, but he put them in a way that maybe it will not come out clear that he has asked them. This is the first round, and correctly there are other issues will come in. Can you allow this department to respond?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honourable members. The first question relates to the changing the finance allocation. I think what we need to understand there in terms of 99, 2000 going forward, and why it looks smaller than 2001-2, despite the fact that we have some minimal growth and one would expect. So that was the question, if I understood correctly. I think certain work that was undertaken during the period, primarily the work in the Eastern Cape, if you remember when the DPSA, the Public Service Commission, had a major intervention in the Eastern Cape, that would be one. And then there was Resolution 7 of 2000 as well, you will recall, which dealt with restructuring and matching and placing of officials. That kind of work led to a bigger budget during that particular period, and hence the budget shrunk again after that. So I hope that addresses that particular question. There's also the question from the Honourable Ulis.
And we are still the Eastern Cape intervention. Well, it's not that was to be carried against their own budget.
Part of it was carried against their budget.
Okay, but the major part was.
Yeah. Okay. And we were also able to recoup some of it over time.
Okay.
There was an intensive process from our finance department in DPSA to ensure that all the things that we were supposed to recoup, we were ultimately able to recoup. Yeah. Now, the Honourable Ulis asked quite a direct question. What is the HOD going to perform? Well, I think it is very important to understand why we do performance management. It's not purely a punitive mechanism or tool. It's supposed to be developmental as well. So if it's done properly, we would be able to see, on the one hand, these are the development needs. Are we putting in place steps to address those development needs? And if we are and there's still no performance, well, I think it's clear what has to happen. So my view is that if we are managing performance properly and they are properly well-signed, well-constructed performance agreements in place, and if managers on an ongoing basis or heads of departments are able to meet the commitments they've made through those performance agreements, then you have to have action, which could eventually, in certain cases, lead to incapacity and dismissal. I mean, I think that's clear. I don't think we need to shy away from that. That doesn't mean that we have to, you know, just lead a charge against every HOD and fire them. But I mean, I think your question is what if there's consistent non-delivery and non-performance? Then people would have to be dismissed, in my view.
But, sir, you know why I asked you the question?
Mm.
Because this is the problem in municipalities. Managers don't perform, but they get performance bonuses into the year.
Mm.
We're talking about a lot of money here.
Sure.
Which they decide to give to themselves. That's what I'm talking about. What are we going to do about it? I mean, you can't. There's something put in front of you that say to perform, you're going to get this. But there's nothing that says if you don't perform, we take away this. I mean, some way we must tell them. I mean, I want delivery.
Well, that is why we would argue that HR norms and standards for government workers across the board in what we would call a single public service is a very important value, because it's important that wherever you sit in the governmental system, you have signed performance agreements, you deliver against those agreements, and that you get rewarded and punished according to your level of delivery against those agreements. That is an HR norm and standard. That is a value which we aspire to through the single public service. But in any event, yes, I mean, obviously we don't agree with that. But at the moment, you know, individual municipalities would have to account for the condition which you have described there. At the moment, as we said, we are really talking about the jurisdiction of national and provincial governments. But the principle would be the same. That if there's non-performance against the performance agreement, then certain actions have to be taken. And an accumulation of those actions would surely lead to punitive action. It would have to. Dr. Rupnarain asked a number of questions. The skills development levies in terms of the PCTA, the actual learnership which have been implemented through the PCTA have been funded by the skills development levies. So really what we are funding on the PCTA are the other operational and HR and, you know, corporate costs of the institution, basically. The Know Your Rights, our intention is to translate that into all official languages so that all citizens will be able to make use of what I've described as a very user-friendly document, booklet. I think ensuring minimum anti-corruption standards are implemented, it comes back to our challenge of compliance. Because the frameworks are always there. We have the frameworks for HR, financial management, anti-corruption, governance, etc. But then what is the compliance mechanism? It's tighter now with the Amendment Act. It does provide for stricter measures to be taken by the Minister and even the Public Service Commission when there's non-compliance with some of these matters. But I think it is ultimately about rigorous monitoring and reporting, and then action and follow-up. I think this is where we have to steel ourselves and be very decisive in acting where there is continued non-compliance. The same as the performance agreement. The Honourable Matsomela also asked some questions about the options. And if we can just look at those options. The question was, you first asked about the program structure. You asked about the program structure and why we've reduced the number of programs. And I think the answer to that question really, just to give you also the historical picture, is that historically the DPSA had those three programs, which was really administration, integrated HR, and service delivery improvement. And then there were a number of things that began sort of being added to the mandate of the DPSA. And originally they were sometimes accommodated under administration, but then we created separate programs for them. And the one area would be anti-corruption, for example, was a separate program. The other would be monitoring evaluation. And then we had the International African Affairs. What we decided when we reduced them from 6 to 8 was to combine them into one called governance. It was a management decision. It didn't weaken the programs per se at all. It didn't reduce the levels of finance being allocated to them. It was a rationalization of their management, because program managers report to the DG. Now, there were too many people reporting to the DG, and we felt that we should create a new branch under a new program manager, which was the governance branch. Okay, I think you did also ask about the whole issue of management effectiveness in relation to the GIS, and then as well as to how we're going to improve professionalism, etc. I think what we want to do with the GIS is really look at how we deploy managers, and get a real picture of where our managers are deployed in relation to the services which are delivered to our people on the ground. That's what this GIS hopefully will show us. And I think there is a view that maybe we have focused too much on the national departments and the head offices in terms of managers. And because they're all sitting in head offices, especially with a big service delivery department, they're not adding much value within the service delivery chain. And maybe if you had more senior managers on the ground in a district office of home affairs, when people have real problems, we would be able to resolve them much more speedily and efficiently. So I think this system will give us that picture, amongst other things, because it's also going to show us, in relation to where our population is distributed, do we have service delivery points? Or are they tending to concentrate in more urban kind of settings, which I think is probably going to be the case. I think that we will find that. And I think many of us are aware of that. But when you can begin to depict that and show it with real information, statistics, then we can begin to look at how to reorganize it in a more user-friendly manner. I think enhancing professionalism.
I just want to check in. Should we look forward to the redeployment of managers, or is it too early to anticipate that?
Well, I need to be cautious because we are looking into this whole matter in relation to the single public service. And, you know, we're obviously looking into the legal side of it. But I would say at an intense side, we would like to have people in the right place. But now when we look at, you know, what is actually involved and how we define the public interest and all that, there are legal challenges to it. But I think the intention would be that we do have people in the right place to service our people. And with that we'd have to go a whole lot of other issues which have been raised time and time again, and that is the question of rural allowances, etc., 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 or incentives to get the right people, not only managers, but when we talk about professionals as well, how do we encourage professionals to work in lesser developed areas of our country? Okay, how do we get our best professionals to work in rural clinics, etc.? It's the same kind of issue. But I do think that we would seriously need to consider the deployment of our management staff. That's my personal opinion at any rate. On the enhancing of professionalism, I think there are things that we have done, maybe not as well as we should have, which we need to do better. But I think and that would be our various forums which we have for the senior management service. Because what we want to do is, we want to say the SMS is not simply about conditions of service. It's not simply about a package that can compete with the private sector. It must be about a commitment. Civil service must have a commitment. They must have a civic duty and a commitment. Okay. But one of the things which I certainly feel strongly about, and which may be controversial, but I don't think in terms of the way I see it, is to develop a professional association. It's not about a trade union or anything like that. It's about, because any profession, anywhere in the world, professions have associations, which are not really about matters of mutual interest. They're about matters of profession, about enhancing the profession, about setting standards within the profession. And I believe the senior management service should also have that kind of an association. It would provide support to its members. It would probably have a journal. It would provide a separate vehicle other than the DPSA for, you know, running events, programs, which enhance professionalism amongst the senior management service. So, obviously, where the skepticism is on the managers now wanting to form a trade union. But I don't think that's the intention at all, really. I think it's more about, well, some people might like that, but anyway, I think it's more about building a sense of professionalism. So that's one of the things. On its own, it wouldn't really achieve what we wanted to achieve. But like I say earlier, I think when we talk about performance management, we tend to see it a bit punitively. You know, that here's the performance agreement, you do it or you don't do it, but then we never take much action anyway. But it's also aimed at development. Remember, it's called the Performance Management and Development System. So as we manage performance, we're supposed to be identifying areas where development must take place. And hopefully now with the Leadership Development Strategic Framework, that we will actually begin to address more proactively the building of this ethos, the building of the solid cadre of managers in the public service. Okay, the squeeze from Treasury, and what is, will the single public service help across the board to utilize resources more optimally? One thing that does fascinate me, I must say, is the bureaucracy in this country as in other countries, where people really protect turf. Institutions create turf and protect turf. And our constitutional provisions on cooperative governance need to really be realized in practice. And obviously there are good examples where we've made progress in this regard. But there is duplication. There is duplication. And the single public service really is very much about building cooperative governance. So I think that we need to try and eliminate duplication and also get better synergies. Because we start by saying departments will need to work together. If we want to make land reform successful, then you're going to have Department of Agriculture, you're going to have district councils, you're going to have municipalities, they're all going to have to work together to make it a success. And then when it's not happening, then one department, land affairs or whatever, will say, okay, we're going to have to build some capacity now to do these things, which should really be done through cooperative governance by other institutions of government. And that's when we start having duplication, and it's not an optimal use of resources. So I do think that the single public service, the information systems we're building around it, including the GIS, should assist in optimal use of resources. And then the Honourable Chair did ask, tag on the question, what are the implications for the DPSA? The implications are big because we believe that public servants that we need to have change management. We need to really make sure that public servants understand the single public service, because it is, as I emphasize, about cooperative governance, and we need to prepare public servants to work in a different way, to work across boundaries. And by the way, it's not only between departments, within departments, within the DPSA, to get the different branches to cooperate. And this goes for all departments. It's a challenge, actually. I don't know what it is about the bureaucracy. Maybe the performance management system is also having that negative aspect about it. As well, I don't know, but I think there will be big implications for the DPSA in terms of preparing government for change that will come about through a single public service, and also actually driving some sort of a change management program. We are developing one at the moment. Because I think getting the local sphere to work with provincial and national departments on a common agenda will be a challenge as well. We've seen that with the Tucson centers. Very noble ideas, but then there's not enough buy-in from departments. I'm sure many of you are aware from your constituency work and so on. There's not enough buy-in. Departments, they don't want to come in. They prefer their own building with their own arrangements because it's convenient to them. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Cindy. The many on table, KK, the mayor.
All right, thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the wake-up call for where one has been hibernating. Right, two questions. The first one revolves around the pillar. Policy on the incapacity leave and ill health and remuneration. Why is it allocated such a big chunk of the pie? And does it look like the public service is so sick, or what is actually happening? And then one notices that according to these documents, it is allocated for only 2008-2009. And then doesn't go over the medium term. So if you could only come to know that. And then, well, perhaps just as a rider, is it just by way of preparing for the STS, for the single public service, and then get rid of dead wood, and then go further? And then the other one pertains to policy option. Elsewhere, yes. The department intends to lease or hire a building along Bruce Street from what the DG said. What are the intentions insofar as the question of each department having its own home? As far as the DPSA is concerned, you see GTI, you see even the police and all that. Even education now, it looks like all these are just putting up structures so that they don't struggle the whole town with this small building there, this small building there. How far is the TSC going about that? Or the GTSA rather, the PSA going about that? Thank you very much.
Thanks. This being the last round, I just want to make sure that I have all the names. It's Mr. Mene, Mr. Kumalo, Mr. Mtembu, Mr. Mashangwani, Mr. Simon, Mr. Nyambi. Is that my mother? Okay. All right. Thanks. Mr. Mene?
Yeah, thank you. Looking at the historical overview that DG gave us, it would be interesting to see the vacancy rate also included in that document from that page, see what happened over the years. Maybe for future reference. The other thing is, I've asked questions to the minister already in terms of the cost of the single public service. I see we are, in this budget, there are certain amounts which, my question is, how far are we with the costing of the single public service? Because we must know, because we must budget. If I can get an answer on that, please. And then, I don't know, we discussed it at our workshop. The date of the budget vote, do we have it yet or not? Are we still? And then, the whole issue of e-government was mentioned. And I would plead to the committees, why you chair that, we really look at this item and bring it forward on the program. With that two documents of the Public Service Commission, I think it's three very, very important issues that we must discuss with this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Mine is a similar question. The position skills, I want to know whether they are fixed positions or they are, or are the people who are acting in those positions, because you are sitting here with an acting CFO, if I'm not mistaken.
And the reason why I'm asking this question, Shepherd, is because, you know, to keep on people acting in positions like that, it demoralizes people and it brings about some kind of instability in the workplace. So I really want us to work on that one and find out exactly as to what is happening at prison. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My questions are around recent achievements. I think the completion of the submission of service delivery improvement plans, as well as the approval by cabinet of the guide on organizational structure, is very much welcomed. I think these are a very important intervention for improvement of human resource planning as well as service delivery, which are interrelated. What I want to know is I know this is a guide, you know, but there's also a desire from the administration to ensure that before any organization, any organization structure is implemented, they will look into it, which is important. What I want to know is whether these important, you know, guides, have they been distributed? Who will be undertaking some oversight, especially around this question of service delivery improvement? I'm aware it's December, the other one is not quite clear, but have they been distributed? Can we say the departments actually are having these documents? And after some, I mean, probably during the course of this year, we may be in a position to see the department actually doing this important work and having proper organizational structures. Thank you.
Thank you very much. May I have another one?
Thank you, Shepherd. Mine is just to check on this the issue of geographical information system. As it indicated that was indicated that it's where managers are located. I just want to check whether it's going to include the city buildings. And then about the accommodation. Whether there is any time frame for this accommodation. And the other one is on 850 officials in 245 municipalities. And then here I'm worried about this training. Whether there is any, maybe whether there are any programs or programs to check the quality and the impact of this training conducted on these municipalities. And then the other one on the assessment on mobile units. This one, I see it's for next year in March. My request was, why can't it be brought back to maybe this year? Because it was going to be an eye-opener for us as members of parliament, as we will be approaching our next year's election. But they are not going, I'm not trying to assist the on that one. Because it is important. We do see this mobile unit for mobile clinics or mobile home affairs programs. So just to check whether really are they having any impact on the at our community. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. First and foremost, I want to apologize for being late this morning and also not being able to attend meetings regularly, because these questions could have been for you or could have been discussed earlier. And but for me, it's a little bit unknown. One is I want to hook onto the single government service. Well, it's attached to the local government being an autonomous form of government in accordance with the constitution. And I would think that the administration is also attached to that. If that has been cleared as such, that's my first question. And then program two. Filling of posts. I would like to have a little bit of more information about how many posts are vacant top echelon, as well as the lower posts of the department, because they were mentioned in program 3 on the retention and how they're going about to retain their staff or to get good qualified. So otherwise, definitely it's going to affect the running of the department's functions. I would like more particulars in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation. It's very assisting. Well, my question on achievements has been correctly covered by Honorable Mtembo. Oh, my observation, Chairperson, is that after the strat plan and you come to this presentation, you know, it's very assisting and it's flowing, because from some of very many questions that we asked when we went to the strat plan, and now they are coming with this presentation, you are able to link and make it here follow up. But it's only one question, DG, in relation to 2009/10, your main cost drivers, this issue of single public service. Maybe, don't you think there might be a need for an intervention? Because I see that it's the only item that is going to be the main cost driver in that financial year. Don't you think maybe there might be a need for intervention to avoid a negative impact in some of your programs that you are doing as a department? That's my only question, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I actually don't have a question. It's just a suggestion this time. Again, it's related to the presentation, the way the presentation is structured. When we look at the intention of the budget, to say to the public, this is what we intend to do with the money that will be allocated to us as a department. And although I know it is not the duty of the department to make life easy for us as members of parliament, but I think it would be much more user-friendly if we could have an analysis of, like, just at the previous financial year, 2007-2008, to say 2007-2008, these were our priorities, this is how much was allocated, this was what has been achieved, and this is what is still left right. Because we are going to debate this budget, and I have learned not to take our, you know, the public for granted. They definitely do keep track of what we say when we debate them. And when I go to my constituents, they always come back to say, you were debating on this budget last year, you said ABC, and now you are debating again, you say you are telling us about something different. How does that relate to this? So if it could be structured in such a way that we are able to check on the developments, be able to highlight where the problems are, and try to solve, to come up with a solution to the problem. Thank you.
Thanks for that. I think did you comment on that? Over to you, PG.
Thank you very much. I'm also going to, at the end, ask Michelle to make a few comments on e-government, which Mr. Mini raised, as well as the assessment on the mobile units. But I would actually like to say that I believe that it is our duty to make things user-friendly for the members. That is what we are supposed to do. I suppose because we do present our annual report, we just assume that that's when we'll give the kind of analysis. But I think, you know, we will certainly in future take into account the specific requests. So that, you know, even when we present on the budget, we do reflect on the previous year. But of course we will come back to the annual report. On PILA, just to explain what this PILA is about, sort of briefly, what we found is that a lot of money was going to waste because of incapacity leave and ill health retirement. And then we came up with a pilot which said if we provide expert medical advice to DGs or heads of department, will that lessen the cost and the impact on the department of incapacity leave and ill health retirement? And the results were such a cost saving in the police, Free State, and I think Corrections is where we piloted this, that Cabinet emphasized that we needed to just roll this thing out immediately. So the real cost driver is around hiring service providers who are what we call health risk managers to advise heads of departments on whether, because people will go on leave, they keep submitting doctor certificates, you know, and things like that. And how does the head of department, who's not a medical expert, really understand whether these are genuine and bona fide? So that's where the health risk manager, that's the main cost driver of this. Now, when we started rolling it out nationally, there was a bit of a debate with Treasury, but we did ultimately feel that for the first few years, we should hold the budget centrally, which means that we have to drive the whole procurement and tendering process for these health risk managers across the whole country, and then actually manage the money which pays them for the advice they give to HODs. But now we're moving to decentralize these budgets so that heads of department themselves will need to appoint their own health risk managers, etc., etc. So I hope that explains that particular issue on PILA. It's not really linked to the single public service at all. The single public service is not really aiming at any sort of rationalization in that sense of reducing numbers or any. That's not really what the thinking is at all. It's more about trying to get the right people in the right place to deliver services for the people. I think that's the high level of that. On the building, certainly on our own side, I think we're partly to blame for the current situation because we had a very unuser-friendly building and we were looking for a new building for some time and we got this offer and they showed us the nice pictures and indeed it is a much better building than our previous one, but we didn't adequately take into cognizance the growth in our personnel. So as we moved in, we started finding that the building is closing in on us a bit. We've got a lot of good facilities. We've got a gym facility. We've got a cafeteria facility. Facilities we never had in the past, which we have, which improve the well-being and the health of the staff and the general atmosphere within the building. Yes, for the official. Yeah. We even have a proper, you know, a health and wellness center, you know. So, but we didn't adequately project around the increase in personnel. And also we don't have a good facility for big meetings. So we have recognized that we need to expand. What Public Works is talking about, together with the city of, or the metro, the Tshwane Metro, is the creation of a government precinct in the middle of Pretoria, which will bring all the government buildings into one space where you'll have walkways, where you won't have to cross streets and so on. That is something that's being planned. I think it's a good point that we should look at the vacancies in the future, but I would like to give you some information since you've raised this, and also the Honourable KK raised this as well. I think, and Honourable Simmons as well, I think, raised it. Just on the current situation, if we look at our current structure, which would include the PCTA, 22 posts, and if we remove the unfunded vacancies, we have 464 posts, 399 are filled, 65 are vacant, and we have a 14% vacancy rate. We are working on the structure now. We're trying to clean up our structure, eliminating all the unfunded vacancies, etc., etc., bring it fully in line with the budget, given, you know, the allocation. So on the new proposed structure, which still needs to be approved by the minister, which would exclude PCTA, there are 468 posts, 379 filled, 89 vacant. All those vacancies are funded. It's slightly over budget, so we're taking some risks here, but knowing the pattern of how people resign and the length of time to fill a post, we believe we can aim to fill more than we have money for. Yeah. There, the vacancy rate of 16.8%. Now, 65 current vacancies, of which 7 are at the chief director level, 10 at the director level, 16 at the deputy director level, and 32 others. I think that answers your question as well, because I'm just combining to save time on that. Of course, what you referred to, Honourable Member, is a project where we're dealing with the whole public service. And the top echelon vacancies. We can actually supply that information. I don't have it in my head, because we have done a survey of that. I think we can supply the committee with that information across the public service of the number of DDGs. It also changed since we did it. There's less DG vacant now than there was at the time that we did it. But I think we can supply that to the committee. Yeah. Across the public service, yeah. Okay, the costing of the SPS, we are working with a team of actuaries at the moment. And when we submit, not for the gazetting now, next month, when we submit to Cabinet in May for approval to introduce to Parliament, we believe we will have to present the costing scenarios. So I hope that answers the question. It is very complex to cost, and we have to look at different scenarios. And it's not anticipated that everyone will be brought onto the same condition of service. It's complex. We even know in the city of Cape Town, with the various amalgamations that took place and in other big metros, people are on many, many different conditions of service, even remuneration. But when we're talking pensions, when we're talking medical aid, it gets into a very complex terrain when if one is looking at harmonization, that's what we're looking at. The date of the budget vote, the probable date would be 3rd of June, but there are some dates in May that have been floated, but I think that's the current date that we're looking at, is the 3rd of June. Michelle's still going to come back to the e-government, some comments and the assessment on the mobile unit. I think we've answered the position polls, and yes, certainly its acting is a problem. I think we agree with all those critical points that were made. On the issue of the SDIP's organization structure guide, etc., when we do the work with the committee, what we have done is we've done an analysis of compliance. Because we managed to raise the level of compliance, as we said, compared with when the commission did their study a few years ago, and we had less than 50% or around 50% compliance. But we have done some sort of a quality audit of the actual SDIP. So we've analyzed the SDIP and we've done a quality statement on the SDIPs across provinces, across clusters and so on. What we're starting to do now, and we're going to begin with the justice cluster, is then to monitor the actual implementation of the service delivery improvement plan. In other words, are the departments able to implement their service standards and the other elements that they've identified in their service delivery improvement plan? So I think certainly that will assist when we do that work. And obviously what we're seeking is to get much better alignment between the service delivery improvement approach and service delivery models and processes with organization structures. So that we don't have a purely functional structure, we have a real operational structure which services the delivery requirements of the department. The GIS, certainly we would need to include the information around CDWs and their deployment. That would be possible. We will be able to do that over time. On the accommodation, like we say, we sort of decided to stick with what we have for a while. And then the following year we want to migrate into, we want to, during this coming year, identify the building, get it ready, and then the following year. I wouldn't say we're in a critical situation at the moment. For me, I just think the one thing which we're really lacking is that kind of big room, because we call a lot of meetings as DPSA. Most of them we do hold in the Reserve Bank when we, you know, if we don't have a boardroom large enough. But we would prefer to have our own facility. Then, certainly an impact assessment of the Budget PD Change Management Engagement Program is something we're going to be working on now during the coming period. It is vital, as you say, because it's obviously we embarking on a train-the-trainer approach. So the 850 officials, the idea is they're also going to train those around them. But we do need to assess what impact, whether it's making a difference, whether there is an uptake of budget at the municipal level and so on. Let me just emphasize on the single public service, on the issue of the autonomy of local government. The administration is part of local government, but nothing in our bill, in the way we're trying to construct this bill, impacts on the powers and functions of the spheres of government. It's about administration, which, as in our current model of the Public Service Act, remains decentralized. So all the powers to appoint, to dismiss, will reside with those functional units of government, a provincial department, a municipality, a national department. There won't be someone sitting at national level who will hire and fire people across a single public service. Obviously, these are issues we will get into later on. But our belief is that there is no undermining of the autonomy of any sphere of government in the way in which the bill is being crafted.
Do you have a question to the DG on that?
Yeah, I think maybe before I come in, let me stress that we are going to have a workshop on this bill as a committee.
Okay.
Where we are going to talk more about what the bill is all about. How swinging is this swinging? and other major questions. We're going to talk more about it.
Okay.
It does that because they are talking about their program here. That they are reflecting on the things that they are actually going to do, including the things of the service.
Thank you,
sir. So I know the temptation is there that we might want to get into detail. I also have that temptation. But you are welcome to make a follow up you if
no, okay, I'll rather wait for the
okay, thank you.
Okay, and then there's just one question, because I've answered Mayor Masomelo already, so it's the Honourable Inyambi, and then I'll ask Michelle to make the comment. Just in terms of whether the SDS will kind of undermine the other work, how do we mitigate the impact on other programs? Well, I think it's sort of a challenge to us, and certainly we will be thinking about that going forward. But what we have managed to do with this program is to have a more integrated team from across the programs, across the branches. And I think that has helped us in sort of mitigating the impact on other programs, because we have now been doing it over a year or so. And I think as we go forward, if we're able to entrench that approach, I think that will help. But certainly I think we do need to think about that. Of course, it's a key cost driver, and the change management will be big. It will involve a lot of engagement with other departments across the spheres of government. But I think it's also a challenge for us to consider that question as we go into our own planning session as well. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Didi. Thank you, Chairperson. I certainly think it would be a good opportunity, a good for us to engage on e-government. As I said at the workshop, I think it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, this portfolio is responsible for IT in government. And I'm not convinced that we are using IT as effectively as we should be using it across the public sector. I want to share with you a definition, if I may, of what we have defined e-government to be. Which very broadly is the use of information and communication technology to allow greater public access to information. So it's the information element that we're looking at. To facilitate more accessible government services, so information and services. To promote more efficient and effective government, which is about the internal administration and operation of government. And finally, to make government more accountable to citizens, to business, and to stakeholders. That is what we define very broadly to be e-government. We've identified a number of initiatives within the DPSA that we have begun to implement across government. Obviously, we can't talk about it in any kind of detail here today. But effectively, our program encompasses those elements, the information and services. How do we improve the internal operational efficiency of the public service, particular the departments? Possibly, we mentioned at the workshop our monitoring and evaluation systems across a spectrum of indicators or activities. And then finally, the issue of accountability to citizens, business, and other stakeholders. So that broadly is our e-government initiative. I also want to say that increasingly governments of, not governments, countries are being measured by their e-government readiness, if you like. There are indices or indexes that the UN and other organizations publish on an annual basis. And unfortunately, as a country, we are beginning to slip further and further down that food chain. And I do not think that that's a very good sign for us as a nation. So I think certainly from a department point of view, from a portfolio point of view, we do need to keep an eye on that and see what are the kinds of interventions we need to make in order to address that. I think it's a little bit of a pity if you think of how long ago we started with e-government. I would say as far back as 1996. It's not easy. It is very complex. And I think as you see, departments want to do their own thing. So when it comes to coordinating, when it comes to working together, you have people pulling in different directions. And from a horizontal governance point of view, from a collaborative point of view, it makes it difficult. DPSA is a coordinating department. Obviously, we wish we had more authority. We wish we had, certainly more resources from the budget that has been outlined there. And one of my concerns, and I think we've addressed it within the department, is that there is no budget for e-government. I think it's a glaring omission. We have agreed that we are going to discuss with Treasury in for future how to address the financing and the resourcing of our e-government implementation. But I thought maybe I should share that information with you. TJ, I'm not sure on the mobile units. Just to maybe comment, we are currently looking at connectivity to the Tusong Center. As you know, service delivery points in remote and rural areas are inadequate. We are looking also to use the GIS to help us with decision support, making decisions about where these Tusong centers should be and how we can be more effective in terms of providing services to citizens. And we're looking at a combination of fixed as well as satellite and mobile units that will then provide these kinds of services to remote and rural communities. My division, together with CETA, amongst others, GCIS, are also looking specifically at the issue of technology, as well as other elements related to service delivery.
And just add very briefly on the mobile units, because there are a number of departments which are offering mobile services, which would include SAS, could include health, could include home affairs. So what we want to look at is the possibility of integrated mobile units, which could offer more than one service. for example. Also, what Homer says, because we had a presentation with them recently, what they indicated was that some of their vehicles were inappropriate vehicles. They weren't vehicles that were able to access bad gravel roads and so on and so forth. So they're actually doing an upgrade of some of their mobile units to make them more mobile for and more appropriate for remote or rural areas. So I think these are the things we want to look at in that particular orange.
No, thank you very much. Lastly, I was reminding me that you see the issue of vacancies, the issue of vacancies is one of the apex priorities. And I think champions in terms of the state of the nation address, champions have been identified to deal with that aspect. And we will also be looking at in terms of this cross-cutting issues that we will have to look at. There are no other questions, no other comments.
There are some two announcements. The first one is that we are going to have a meeting, a comment meeting on Friday. He's the president that says business and we don't.
And we saw all members responding in applause. It can be unusual elsewhere, but it remains usual within the committee. So we are meeting on Friday from 9 to 11. So even those who are going to rural provinces like Limpopo will be able to connect. The second announcement is that it actually goes with an apology. There was a technicality in terms of arranging lunch. We used to have sitting lunch. Due to that technicality, we'll only have lunch here. It's going to be so-called finger lunch at half past one. Our apology. It's not the way we do things ever one for this. Just the technicality for today. And it's not because of your presence, Mr. Simon. So thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Okay.